And I want to ask you, if you would, to open your Bibles to Matthew. We're going to be in chapter 25. We're going to be looking at verses 14 through 30. That's a chunk of scripture there. What is that, 16 or 17 verses? So you might want to follow along when we get there. If you scan that QR code, if you can reach it. If you can't, if your phone won't reach it, you should have been sitting closer to the front. But if you can scan that QR code, it will be helpful to you to get to that. Or you can use a paper Bible. Those are still in vogue as well. So I have a question before I begin. How many people here have or do drive truck professionally? Anyone, you've done it? Okay, just one. There's probably three or four in the early service. Yeah, good. My dad was a truck driver before I was born, and my brother drove truck a lot throughout my life. I drove a truck professionally without a license once. Maybe it was in another country. I'm not going to say or deny either one. Yeah. This is kind of a truck driver's story. Years ago, when cell phones were young, do you know what I mean by that? They'd just been made popular. This is a true story, by the way. A trucker was coming across Interstate 80, and he exited at the Clearfield exit, Route 879. When he got down to the end of the ramp and he saw that stop sign, he must have just said, wonder who that's for, and he blew right through it, not knowing that there was a police officer nearby. And when the lights come on, then he knew that he was in trouble. So the officer came up and took his driver's license, went back to his car. I don't know how they do it today. I'm sure they have some kind of technology, but this was when he took the mic and said, yeah, I need to run this license plate and this driver's license number. And as he was doing that, he happened to look up at the guy in the truck, and he was on a cell phone. Now, you and I would think nothing of that today, but I said, they're brand new. They even had a wire you pulled out of it, you know, for an antenna. So he's on a cell phone. The cop didn't think anything of it, but right about that same time, he was interrupted by dispatch saying, just 3 miles west of Clearfield, there's an 18-wheeler. It's been turned over. It's blocking the road. Get down there. And so he ran up to the truck. He said, take your license. I got to run. And he took his cop car, and he headed down to see what the wreck was down the road. And when he got there was no truck there. There was no accident there. There was nothing there. Anybody remember this story? This is a true story, yeah. And so then, in the next few minutes, they learned a few things about that truck driver. First, they learned that that driver's license number that he had called in, it was not valid. Second, they learned that that trailer that he took the license plate number off of was actually stolen from Texas. Third, they learned that that guy whose name was on that driver's license was wanted in Texas and in Tennessee and in, of all places, Carlisle, Pennsylvania. And fourth, they learned he was nowhere to be found, right? Yeah. It seemed that while they were calling in his license, he was calling in a false report to 911 dispatch to have them go down and check out a wreck that never really happened to divert attention from his own trailer. And it worked for a short time. And in a short time, they found him and took him into custody. Now, I want to say a couple things about that. First, I want to say this. I'm really glad that they caught him because going through a stop sign without regard for other traffic, especially if you have an 18-wheeler, would be a deadly thing to do, right? Second, I want to say I really admire his ingenuity. I mean, don't you? It's like, wow, I could have been driving truck for 1,000 years and never thought to do such a thing as that. He had a talent that I don't have. He just wasn't using that talent the right way. He was using that talent the wrong way. In our text today, Jesus is talking about talents that you have, and he's talking about using those talents. And I want to read this passage to you and then briefly discuss the text. Matthew 25, I'll be reading from the ESV. We're going to begin at verse 14. Jesus is speaking, and he says these words, "For it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted to them his property. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another one," with verse 15. "To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1, each according to his ability. Then he went away. He who received the 5 talents went at once and traded with them and made 5 talents more. So also he who received the 2 talents made 2 talents more. But he who had received the 1 talent went and dug in the ground and hid his master's money. Now, after a long time, the master of those servants came home and settled accounts with them. And he who had received the 5 talents came forward. bringing 5 talents more, saying, Master, you have delivered to me 5 talents. Here, I have made 5 talents more. His master said to him, Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master. And he also, who had the 2 talents, came forward, saying, Master, you delivered to me 2 talents. Here, I have made 2 talents more. The master said to him, Well done, good and faithful servant. You have been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master. He also, who had received the 1 talent, came forward, saying, Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow, and gathering where you scattered no seed. So I was afraid. I went and I hid your talent in the ground. Here, have what is yours. But the master said to him, You wicked and slothful servant. You knew I reap where I have not sown and gather where I scattered no seed. Then you ought to have invested my money with bankers, and at my coming I should have received what was my own with interest. So now take that talent from him and give it to the one who has 10 talents. For to everyone who has, more will be given, and he will have an abundance. But the one who has not, even what he has, will be taken away. And cast that worthless servant into the outer darkness, in that place where there will be weeping and gnashing of teeth. So I want to begin talking to you about talents. And I kind of want to talk about the question, what is a talent? And there are a lot of different opinions on this, a lot of different perspectives on it. I would say to you that a talent is a measure of weight. In Jesus' day, that measure of weight, that's what the Greek language meant when it said talent, it was about 75 pounds. Now, as it would be, the Library of Congress has a photograph taken in the late 1930s of a stone weight that was equivalent to the weight of a talent. And if you could see that up close and zoom in on it like I did on my computer, you would find that it's about 35 centimeters in length, the one on the left if you measure from side to side. That's about 14 inches, just under 14 inches in length. So it would seem that you would put that on one side of the scale, and then on the other side of the scale, you would begin to put your silver coins. And when that came up and it matched, there, that's a talent of silver. Now, there are other perspectives on this, and you'll read other places where it says other things. Seemed to be the one that was more popular in the resources that I read. Jesus is talking here about money. Think how many silver coins that would take to counterbalance, 75 pounds of rock. That's a lot of silver there. It would actually be, in Jesus' day, it would be the equivalence of 20 years of wages for a laborer. 20 years of wages for a laborer. So I thought to myself, I'm going to do a little math. Let me try that. So I got on the U.S., Bureau of Labor Statistics, found out how much a laborer makes in a year. That was 2023 number. I multiplied that by 20, and it came out to, depending on which number you use, between $980,000 and $1.3 million. So let's just pick $1 million for that. So a talent of silver in Jesus' day would be equivalent to $1 million in our day. That is a chunk of change, right? And even if you use other sources for what was a talent, it's a chunk of change. But in our day, when we use the word talent, we mean something different than a weight. We mean something different than money. The English word talent, it came into our vocabulary, into our lexicon, from this parable. Every time you see America's Got Talent, they're using one of Jesus' words right there. Talent. It came in from that. And it's funny how I love to just trace how language changes. up until by the 13th century, which would be 1400 AD, right? A talent actually meant a desire. So if I say this to you, if I say, I have a talent for coffee at that time, I'm saying I am thirsty for coffee. I have a desire for coffee. But by the 200 years later, it actually came to mean what we say, talent. And if I say to you, I have a talent for coffee, you will say to me, great, make me a cup. I'd like to taste what you can make. Yeah. And that's how we use it today. It means a special natural ability or aptitude. If you were at the play, the Kermansville play this week, you saw a lot of talent, a lot of talented kids in the acting, in the singing, in the way they moved, the dancing, the music that was played in the pit band, the way stage crew took and put things in place when it needed to, the sound management. There was just so much talent going on there. It was a beautiful thing. Talent for music might be one of the first things a person thinks of when you think of talent. Maybe not. I have a talent for technology. It is not near what Drew and Doug's talent for technology is. On a scale 1 to 10, if they're like a 9.9, I'm probably a 4.3. But some of you are a 0.1. So just remember that, right? Yeah. So talent isn't just music. It can be a talent for tech. It could be a talent for connecting. Like you've been around people that as soon as you meet them, they're just connecting with you. And you're like, wow, this is a really nice conversation I'm having with this person. They just have a talent. When you go to their place, you feel at peace. And there's athletic talent. There's writing talents. There's teaching talents. All kinds of talents. And it's probably pretty endless, the list of talents we could speak about. So talents in Jesus' day were money. Talents to us are skills and abilities that are generally above the average. I want to just say this, that when Jesus is talking about talents, he's talking about more than money. And he's talking about more than what you can do. He's talking about what Josh kind of prayed about this morning, everything. Everything we are, everything we have, everything we do. Jesus is speaking of, and really this is the point I want you to get at this moment in the message, Jesus is speaking of everything that has been entrusted to you by God for the sake of the kingdom. Let me put that on the screen. When Jesus speaks of these talents, he's speaking of everything that has been entrusted to you by God to use for the sake of the kingdom. He's talking about being a steward of something that belongs to someone else. Now, that word steward, it doesn't show up in my everyday vocabulary very often. But what it means someone whose job it is to look out for something that doesn't belong to them and take care of it. So if you happen to have a home in the Hamptons, right? Maybe you're not there because you're at Kermansville a lot or Clearfield a lot. But you have the home in the Hamptons, you need someone to take care of that. So you would have someone who would steward that property and make sure that the lawn was mowed and the pipes didn't freeze and everything else so you can go there when you need to. That's really what Jesus is speaking of when he talks about these talents. They belonged to the master. They were given to the servant to take care of, to invest for a number of years. He's not talking about talents that are just talents like singing or playing a harmonica. He's talking about all of them. He's talking about the ability to do labor, to cut the grass or to paint or to do plumbing. He's talking about the ability to teach children on a level that they can understand what God might want them to know, or teens for that matter, or adults for that matter. He's talking about the ability to organize a meal for someone who can't provide it in their home for themselves, and you're working in that area to help them with that. When Jesus talks about these talents, probably the things that come to our mind could be endless, many, many things. And his simple point, Jesus' simple point is this: God has given us personal resources, and he will hold us accountable for how we use them. Now, I'm looking, I see several of you nodding, but isn't it interesting how we don't always use our talents for God? Why is that? What are some of the hindrances to using our talents? Now, I want to tell you, I started this list, and it was pretty stinking long, and I realized I don't need to give you a long list. Let me just give you two hindrances, and you can build your list from that. In this passage, I see one of the hindrances is what I'm going to call a perceived lack of talent. You probably said things like this before. I know I have this talent to do this thing, but honestly, I'm not nearly as good at it as Belinda is, right? She is so good at that, and I am just not that person. And when I say that, when you say that, we're kind of saying, Jesus went off and he didn't really give me a talent that's really enough resources. He didn't really give me enough resources to serve him. Really. Take a look at verse 14 again. It says, "For it will be like a man going on a journey who called his servants and entrusted them to them his property. To one he gave 5 talents, to another 2, to another 1, and then catch this phrase, to each according to his ability. And then he went away." So nobody goes without talent. because everybody has some ability, and each person is given the amount of talents that fit with their ability. And the guy who's given the least, if my math's right, he's getting $1 million to use for the kingdom. None of us are shortchanged when it comes to receiving resources that God has for us to use. I feel sure that in every church across America, there are people who don't use what God has given them in terms of resources because they just feel inadequate. But I would say to you, the idea that you're inadequate is simply inaccurate. You were given the talent you were given because it's exactly what you can use. This all almost reminds me of this phrase I've heard before. You know what's coming. There are certain things in this world that God has for you to do, and you are just the right person to do them. Some of you knew Ricky. This was his church home. He passed away. Ricky was in Florida, and he was in a boating accident. And it was a bad one. And Ricky was paralyzed. He couldn't move on his own. I can remember when he had the accident, Laurel. Do you remember this? We happened to be in Orlando because we were there for counsel. And I got a call from his mom that Ricky, who was a little younger than I maybe, I'm not certain how old he was, that Ricky had this terrible accident, and could I put him on a prayer chain? And I did that, and I said, where is he? And I think it was like an hour and a half from Orlando. So Laurel and I got in a car, and we went there and prayed with him in the hospital, and we knew it was bad when we saw him there. I visited him one time in a different hospital, in a Pittsburgh hospital, when he was having a bad time, a real struggle. And I happened to be there when the physical therapist was there who was going to try to get him out. And he was in like an intensive care type unit. And the physical therapist was trying to get him up out of bed just to put his weight on his feet. Mind you, he can't move his legs. He wouldn't even be able to pick his leg up on its own and put it on one of the floorboards on a wheelchair. He had an electric wheelchair. He had one arm that kind of worked, and that's how he got around, as I remember it. The therapist said to me, Pastor, would you help me with this? Would you help me with him? I said, what do you want me to do? I'll tell you what to do. I'll give you step-by-step instructions. Now, I want you to get the imagery here, okay? This is how I recall it. Ricky's a big guy. He's heavier than I am at this point. He's far bigger than the therapist as well. He has little to no strength in his legs. Machines had been helping him breathe just the day before. He can't talk because he has a tracheotomy. Forgive my observation, but for the most part, at this time in his life, Ricky kind of looked like a blob on a hospital bed. Forgive that observation, but I want you to see where he was in this. Now, before I go on with the story, let me ask you a question. What talent does Ricky have for the kingdom? How could God possibly use Ricky at this point in his life? The therapist said to me, come on, let's get him on his feet. So I stood as solidly as I could while the therapist threw Big Ricky's one arm over his one good arm over my shoulder. And then the therapist pushed and I pulled and pushed and I pulled and pulled and I pushed and we worked and worked and worked. And finally, we had put Ricky on his feet and he was standing there as we supported most of his weight. His body was trembling with the effort it had taken him to stand. My face was against his face. His cheek was against my cheek. It was drenched with his sweat. I could just feel the struggle inside of him as I struggled to hold him. He was using all his strength just to remain upright, and I was using all mine to help him. And to my surprise, I was inspired. It was one of those moments like when a light just turns on inside your very being. one of those moments like you see in a movie where an athlete wins the game, you know? But it wasn't that I was watching somebody throw a guy out at first. I was watching a man, Ricky, struggle with all he was to stand. And I felt the desperation in his soul. And I felt the cry of his heart. And I felt the strength in his spirit. And I was inspired. I saw how small my problems were in a way I'd never seen the smallness of my problems before. And I remember thinking to myself, if God can make Ricky stand this way, then God can give me strength to stand every day. And I sensed, this might sound corny, but I just sensed what the angel said to Mary, nothing is impossible with God. Now here's what I want you to take from that story. I'll put it on the screen. If a man who had just come off a respirator, who cannot walk or stand or breathe without oxygen, can inspire another human being so deeply, why would any of us feel we have nothing to offer? Huh. Yeah. God has given you what you need so you can do whatever he has in mind for you to do. He has given you the resources you need to glorify him, to expand his kingdom, to play your role. Do not allow those resources to go unused. Do not misdirect that energy. Do not bury that talent. Use them. Use them. And don't let the lie, that you have nothing to offer keep you from pleasing the Master. Like I said, I could list a dozen of these, but I just want to list a second one here. It's another hindrance to using your talent. It's fear. Fear. Fear of failure. Fear of not doing it right. Fear of getting yelled at. Those things are common, but that doesn't make them acceptable. In fact, fear of all kinds can be paralyzing. It can be stifling. It can be hazardous, actually, in the kingdom. Look at chapter 25, verse 24 and 25. He also, who had received one talent, came forward saying, Master, I knew you to be a hard man, reaping where you did not sow and gathering where you scattered no seed. So I was afraid. And I went and hid your talent in the ground. Here, have what is yours. Fear. You notice it's not just a fear of failure. It's actually a fear that maybe the master will be angry with him on a level that would be unacceptable. It's a fear that is based in a lack of trust, a lack of belief in the master's goodness. I knew you were a hard man. You rip people off all the time. Now, do you think that Jesus wants you to see the Father that way? No way in the world. Why would anyone see the Father that way? Just the perverse view of God. And what would be your reaction if you saw the Father that way? You would be scared of him. You would not trust him. But the Father is not this way. The Father is good. And fear makes you sometimes doubt the goodness of the Master. Trust, faith. Sometimes people will say, well, the opposite of those things, the opposite of faith, is doubt. But I really believe with all my heart that more deeply than that, the opposite of faith is fear. The opposite of trust is mistrust that is grounded in fear. And you don't need to fear God. God knows what you can and cannot do, and he gives you resources that correspond to that. You may think, I'd like to just tell this person what Jesus means to me and share my faith with them. But, oh, man, I wish an elder or my Sunday school teacher or Pastor Steve was here to do that, because I know I'll fail at doing that. I want you to, when you have that thought in your head, I want you to just think, would God open that opportunity for you and entrust you to do it if he didn't provide for you the resources to do it? You're going to have to trust him. Trust him. You may think, oh, you know what? I know that I should spend more of my life growing to know God more deeply, and I really need to find time to study his word, to do my devotions, to even teach a Bible study. I feel like I could do that, but man, I don't know. I want you to just consider, would God put that thought into your heart? Would he put that desire into your heart and then not provide for you that which you need to do that? You're going to have to make a commitment and trust him. Or maybe God would say, the resource I want to talk to you about is your time, because I just find it so difficult. There's so many things I'd like to do for the kingdom, but I find it so difficult in my schedule to find time to do that. But I want you to ask yourself, would God put the idea of serving him into your heart if you didn't have the time to do it? You're going to have to do the hard work of pruning some dead wood, dead branches, maybe even weeds that look quite flowerful. The dandelions, the thistles. You're going to have to prune that stuff out of your time so that you can use your time, which is one of the talents God has given all of us, in a way that glorifies him. You're going to have to trust him. Don't let fear cause you to bury your talent in the ground. Like I said, there's a lot of other hindrances, but what I'd like to do before we have communion is just offer you a couple take-home lessons. After all, the parables, that's what they are. They're stories that have a lesson to them. They teach us things. And one of the things that I take home from this is that you can do significant things with what God has given you. Your talents were given to you for a purpose. And it doesn't matter if he gave you five talents or one talent or one one-hundredth of a talent. He's giving you power to do something that is meaningful and significant. And you can put those to work in the kingdom. As you make day-by-day decisions on how to use your talents, Jesus wants you to know that the master is looking forward. Hear the sentence. The master is looking forward to sitting down with you and saying, so, how do you use the talents? Because he wants to celebrate that with you. And he will require an accounting. Look at verse 19. Not long after that time, the master of those servants came and settled accounts with them. Boy, if you bury your talent, I'm just going to say one thing about it. That'll be a bad day, right? That's all I'm going to say about burying the talent. Because I want to talk about, if you use your talents well for his glory, you're going to be blessed. And the blessing is going to be incredibly significant to your soul. First, you'll be blessed with words of affirmation. Look at verse 21. The master said to him, well done, good and faithful servant. Man, I long to hear that more than I long for anything else. More than peach or blueberry pie with vanilla ice cream, which is like the best thing there is in the whole world, except for this. Well done, good and faithful servant. That affirmation, if when you're in heaven and God says that to you, if you're wearing socks, it's going to blow your socks off. I think you'll probably be in sandals, be barefooted, so there'll be no socks. Well done, good and faithful servant. You're blessed by his words of affirmation. You're blessed by future responsibility in the kingdom. Look at the second part of verse 21. You've been faithful over a little, I will set you over much. Now, you know, if you see what you're doing in the kingdom as a pain in the neck, that part of the verse stinks. Wait a minute, I've just been dealing with these talents and I'm so tired of it, I want to give them back to you. But if you see it that way, you really need an adjustment in your thinking. I talked to a lot of missionaries. There was one in my home this past week. His name was Noah. He was at men's group Thursday night with us. Noah is in a place where there's no electricity, intermittent internet. If his kid breaks an arm and has a compound fracture, he's going to have to fly him off the island to Australia. His house has windows downstairs but not upstairs. He and his family have had malaria multiple times. I said to him, You're crazy. That's just got to be awful. He said, well, you know, the kids have a preventative thing, so it doesn't hurt them real bad, and we have the medicines to fix it right with us, so yeah. All of those things going on, you may be tempted, and don't you dare do it, but you may be tempted to pity him. Don't you dare do that. Do you know why? Because he's living the dream. He's doing exactly what he wants to do. Because in his heart, having resources to serve the King of Kings is the highest calling there is. Charles Spurgeon, who was a preacher a few years back, he is credited with saying, if God calls you to be a preacher, don't ever stoop to be a king. Us preachers, we love that quote. Listen, when God calls you to use whatever your talents are, even if it's fixing a leak on a toilet in a nursery, don't stoop to do something different. Because that is service to the King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And when he entrusts you with that and you do it, he's like, I hope you were fulfilled in doing that because I have more. I have more for you to do. I have never talked to a missionary who has said, oh, this is such a pain in the neck. They love what they're doing. And that's a picture for you and me, that as we do what God has us to do, we will love it. And when he says, you've been faithful over a little, I will set you over much, we say, cool, cool. So number one, words of affirmation. Number two, further responsibility. And number three, indescribable joy. Look at the end of verse 21. Enter into the joy of your master. So I read so many commentaries that say, here's what that is. And you know what it is? I can tell you, it's the joy of your master. I don't know anything else about it. No, neither does anyone else. It just means being with your master and enjoying the joy. And I don't know if that involves, I don't know if it involves a ribeye steak or not, but whatever it needs to involve to be the joy of the master, that's what it is. And you get to participate in that joy. You see what it says on the screen? You can do significant things with what God has given you. That's the first take-home life lesson. Here's the second one. There's a lot on the line. Great regret versus great joy. I'm not going to say much about this. I just want to say this. The greatest regret, I believe this parable teaches that the greatest regret you will ever experience is when you do not use what God has given you for his purposes. And then I would say this. The greatest joys you will ever know is when you come to use what God has given you for him. I do a lot of funerals. So many people say to me, must be really hard to do a funeral for someone you don't even know. I'll tell you what's hard, doing a funeral for someone I know. That's hard. I do a lot of funerals, and when I come home, like I came home from doing a funeral here a week or so ago, and I am on cloud nine. I mean, I got the adrenaline high of having served the King of Kings. It is such a great joy that I feel when I come home from that. My heart aches for the people who were involved. I pray for them. I am sorry for their loss. But I am so filled with joy in being able to help the King of Kings. Do you know what else I do? I fix old people's cell phones. Doesn't that sound funny coming from a guy with a white beard? And when I fix somebody's cell phone, and they're like, I don't know why, I keep getting this pop-up. Well, that's because you have your browser open to this page. Let's just close it. Oh, yeah. If you don't go to that page again, that won't happen. I can't imagine why you'd go to that page again. Oh, Pastor, you're just awesome at this stuff. I know I am. No, I don't say that. But when I walk away from that, I'm on an adrenaline high, a spiritual high, because I just served in the kingdom. The greatest joys you will ever know is when you come to use your own talents that God has given you for him. So we're coming up on communion in just a moment. I just want to ask you, how are you using what God has given you? I think it's safe to say the trucker that it was in our beginning illustration was using it the wrong way, right? But if that brain he had could be used for good, use your powers for good and not for evil, trucker, right? Yeah, how are you using what God has given you? And will you and I hear, well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful over a little. I will set you over much. Enter into the joy of your master. I want you, as we take communion this morning, to talk to God, examine yourself, take an inventory. Are you using what he has given you to his glory? When Josh prayed this morning, he said it so well. Josh, did you listen to the first service? Is that how you knew to do that? Must have been the Spirit of God. What do you think, buddy? He said it so well. It's not that God wants some of us. He wants everything we are and everything we have. Well, how dare he? Who does he think he is? First, he thinks he's God. And second, he thinks he's the one that purchased your redemption with his blood. And when he gives you these things, it is for your benefit and his glory.